Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power.
Remember sport? That thing you used to love? It's back.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Come see again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, later on in the Football Show this evening, we'll be talking to Paddy Agnew about Serie A. In the meantime, though, Premier League latest, three games completed. Manchester City 5-0 winners against Newcastle, very much in keeping with their season. 1-0 defeat on Sunday, and then they are scintillating this evening and far too good for Newcastle, who have been very decent themselves, albeit they have played plenty of games. Jesus with the opener, Riyad Mahrez with the second, then there was an OG, Fernandez, and then David Silva scored a fourth, and Sterling scored a fifth. So 5-0. And Manchester City make off with 3 points. Elsewhere, West Ham, very much back in relegation mire. They lost at home to Burnley, 1-0. So suddenly West Ham find themselves level on points with Watford after Watford's win last night. And Aston Villa, who will be playing Manchester United tomorrow, have a game in hand if they win that, albeit a big enough if. But Villa will then suddenly be within a point of Watford and West Ham. We'll bring you that game live tomorrow, Aston Villa and Manchester United, by the way. And then the other game this evening, John Egan, 92nd, third minute at a time, nil all, Sheffield United at home to Wolves. There was a corner and a bit like buses. He scored at the weekend, scored again here tonight. Brilliant header. It was far from unchallenged. It was far from a free header. He got up and got his head to it and probably took a bit of a crack in the cheekbone afterwards, and celebrations went wild. So it was a brilliant goal from John Egan. 1-0 winners, Sheffield United. So they are the three games completed. As for the ongoing game, it's gone half-time at the Amex Stadium. Let's go over to Richard Newman.
Half-time, Brighton and Hove Albion 1, Liverpool 2. The champions clinical in the first 10 minutes of this game after pouncing on two mistakes from the hosts. Mo Salah opened a scoring in the 6th minute after David Proper gave the ball away on the edge of the area. And then less than 2 minutes later, Adam Webster lost possession. A quick move from Liverpool led to Jordan Henderson curling the ball past Matt Ryan. But since then, Brighton grew into the game and had the better chances. Neil Mope should have scored from close range, but just before the break, Leandro Trossard, who's been Brighton's best player, thumped home a finish from a Tariq Lamptey cross to reduce the deficit. So is it game on? It's Brighton 1, Liverpool 2 at the break.
We will let you know across the evening. So as mentioned later on, Paddy Agnew talking Serie A. But first, Stephen Kenny was doing media today. It seemed the media at large were summoned to Abbottstown. Nathan Murphy went along and he's with us now. Hey, Nathan.
Evening, Joe.
So this was pretty much, bar the initial, very much in the midst of a COVID-type interview Stephen Kenny did, and they were generally in-house from memory as well. This was pretty much his first meeting with the Irish sports media at large today.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting for Stephen Kenny because he would have quite a close relationship with the Irish sports media from his time as a League of Ireland manager and from being around the League of Ireland for decades. And most League of Ireland managers would have quite a good relationship and a close relationship with the media and feel it's incumbent on them to have just that so that they can promote the league. Whereas now he's in a very different position where he needs to try and keep at a certain arm's length, but I guess still in trying to enjoy that honeymoon period where there's a warmth towards him from the media, and also particularly, I think, from the supporters who are desperate for him to do well. So again, because it is still in COVID times, it's not the big press conference in front of a packed room, and we've been to various fancy locations through the years for managers' first press conference. This, where I interviewed him, as you'll see, was literally outside the front door of Abbottstown, not even allowed in the front door for once, not for the usual reasons why we're not allowed in for Abbottstown, but for social distancing purposes, we weren't allowed inside the front door. And again, it was restricted, I think, to one journalist per newspaper, whereas quite often you'd have a gaggle of them there to cover this in a variety of different ways. But he seems very relaxed, seems as happy as can be with the way preparation is going. Obviously, I'm sure it's frustrating that he can't get along to any of the matches because there are so many, but it's just not worth the risk at the moment. I know Keith Andrews is over in England at the moment working with Sky Sports, so I'd imagine Keith will see a lot of games over the next couple of weeks. He was at Fulham last night where Harry Arter, I don't know if you saw this, smashed in a cracker from about 30 yards out, and he was one of the players who was name-checked by Stephen Kenny today. Not in the interview you'll hear. He covered, between the probably 10 interviews he did, he covered a whole lot. Players-wise, mentioned Harry Arter as somebody who's back in the mix, obviously having had a little bit of a fallout, it turned out, with Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill. James McCarthy, possibly the most interesting one, back in the mix again. Mick McCarthy had spoken to him around his final internationals when he was just breaking back into the Crystal Palace team, and McCarthy at that stage didn't want to come, and we all worried that maybe actually he felt his time with the national team had passed, but he just wanted to get himself back up to full fitness and playing regularly with the club, which he's been done. So Stephen Kenny says he's fit, and he could be a big, big player, you feel, for Stephen Kenny. He's settled right back in at Crystal Palace. Could we be going back in that game against Bulgaria to the three-man midfield that we saw so well during Euro 2016 with McCarthy at the base and Hendrick and Brady either side? I don't think it'd be a huge surprise.
It felt like the one we were destined for 4 years ago. Suddenly here we are. It never really materialised. And I saw as well, and this is something every Ireland manager has to get used to, he's quizzed about players would you consider bringing in? And I saw Stephen Ireland was put to him today as, would you consider Stephen Ireland, who had been doing an interview recently, I think in The Athletic.
The Athletic, yeah.
I keep meaning to get round to it. I'm told it's a brilliant interview, but Ireland was certainly saying he wanted to come back and put things right with Ireland and felt he could still do something. So I think I don't know, maybe there was a...
Well, we had John Walters on.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be AM the following morning, and I'd heard from a couple of different people, all right, that Stephen Ireland was still involved with current players in training sessions and playing five-a-sides, and skill-wise is exceptional. And John Walters was making the point that, well, that's not really a surprise because he is one of the most technically gifted players you would see. Mm. But the athleticism that's needed to play in the Premier League or even the Championship right now, that he would wonder whether Stephen Ireland would have that to get back in. And even then, Stephen Kenny was asked about it today, and I've read two different articles, one of which said, nah, this won't be happening. And another was, well, obviously, if he comes back and he gets to the level he was on at, we'll consider him. So there's lots of interesting little bits and pieces, I think, that people will read over the next couple of days. I do find with Stephen Kenny, there's lots of almost overly subtle, I don't want to say digs at Mick McCarthy, but questions of the previous era. He was obviously questioning of previous eras before he was in this role, and that hasn't gone away. And one of the things he talked about today in the press conference with the written press was that looking at back at the previous game, so they've looked back at all of Ireland's games from qualification again and again and again, that Ireland weren't missing many chances, so people question our front players and the quality. He was making the point that they simply didn't create any chances. So there's not this long stream of missed opportunities from players who aren't good enough. They literally weren't creating any chances. So that's probably his first task, is to get them creating enough chances, because you're only going to ever take a certain percentage of them anyway. So he's talking a good game and certainly talking about getting them playing the style of football that people want and expect, but also being realistic, talking about maybe having one and a half training sessions before that game against Bulgaria. And that might be something we're getting into about John Egan and Matt Doherty and where they fit into all of this and what sort of system he can play to try and get all the players that he constantly name checks, which include Egan, Doherty, Duffy and Coleman, how you get all those players in the same team.
Okay, well, let's hear from him. Just before we do, was that that was the format then today, that it was one journalist one-on-one with Stephen Kenny and then next journalist is up, as opposed to some kind of big press conference? Or did he do a presser as well?
There was a press conference at the end. So he did all the radio stations, television stations, and then went in and spoke to the five or six, I think it looked like. It certainly wasn't the huge number you would expect. It looked like there was only five or six of the written press journalists there. So not 50 different cameras gazing down at him as might be expected for his first senior press conference.
Okay. Sit tight there a moment. We'll come back to you in a sec. Here is Nathan chatting to Stephen Kenny at Abbottstown today.
All right. I'm delighted to be joined by the Republic of Ireland manager, Stephen Kenny. How are you keeping?
Yeah, very well, Nathan. Thank you.
Good. There's a lot of matches ongoing at the moment. Ordinarily, as Ireland manager, you've been England week on week, keeping an eye on your players. How are you managing at the moment?
Yeah, no, we're very busy and it's great. You know, obviously the new background team, Keith Andrews, Damien Duff, and Rory Higgins. You know, we've been able to completely analyse Bulgaria, their 8 qualifying matches. You know, we've been able to absolutely sort of scrutinise their performances. They have a new manager, of course, and they've had they've beaten the Czech Republic in since he's taken over. So we've been able to watch Finland and their campaign.
Yeah,
it's hard to believe. Pukki scored 10 goals for Finland, you know, in the campaign, which is amazing, really. And they've qualified for the Euros. Mm. We've managed to watch Wales, their 8 games. You know, we'd watch 2 games each, for example, and then present to each other. You know,
see if you're on the same.
Well, we
same
all
lines.
Ask different questions all the time, and I think it's. We've watched Slovakia, very interesting games. Slovakia, contrasting games, and I think a very experienced, very settled team, and we've been able to watch them. We've been able to, obviously through Y Scout and Instat, you know, you're able to watch all of the games really in the UK and absolutely scrutinise them. So we're watching them all, and
you'll be the best prepared Irish management team that's ever been.
You know, we're the only team that's ever lived in Ireland, and that's a disadvantage at the moment. You know, obviously with COVID, but you know, we all live here. This is, we're at the centre of the FAI. This is, you know, what we're all hungry to do well. And I think we've been able to, like, every week there's 34, 35 players you need to see.
Yeah.
And their performances, like, not all of them are playing, but we want to see as much as we can all of their performance, check on their current form, and analyse how they're doing.
And what about contact with your own players then, because we've spoken to Matt Doherty and John Egan over the last few weeks. You said they had a Zoom call with you at one stage over the last few weeks. Are you in regular contact, or is it just so busy for them at the moment you wait till the end of the season?
I think I'm not in regular contact. You know, I think I'm you know, we had good Zoom calls with all of the players, and you know, so we could articulate what I'd be looking for. Yeah, and just to get to know them a bit better and understand their, you know, their backgrounds a bit more. And I think but there's a lot of players, and you know, I think I've been able to monitor all their progress, and I think we'll be meeting up shortly. You know, I think we won't see it going in now. You know, there's 8 games now between September, October, November. You won't see it flying in, and I think we're planning a course, how we're going to prepare and so forth. And
have you had to think about those communications on Zoom? Here we have all had to get used to it, but you would have expected your first meetings would have been face-to-face, as to how you get across what your thought process is, what your hopes are for the next 3-6 months heading into next year, as how you get that across in the space of probably 15-20 minutes on a Zoom call.
Yeah. And I think we might revisit that closer once we name the squad. Mm. You know, we've an extended squad at the moment. Maybe when we, you know, in the week leading up to it, up to the camp in Bulgaria, because it's unusual. We come in on the Sunday. Some players could actually be playing on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And we fly on the Tuesday. So you actually only, you know, you have half a session on the Monday, depending on who's played on Sunday. And then train on Tuesday, and we're on the flight, and that's it. You know, we're getting ready in the stadium, and so that's the nature of it. But no, we have clear instruction. Everyone, you know, obviously it's difficult with just a couple of days preparation, but we'll make our, you know, tactical plan, what we expect of the players, very clear, and we'll make sure that we're as well prepared as we can be.
How
between like the various analysis meetings that you have, whether we do some of them on Zoom once we name the squad as possible, and whether, you know, coming in on the Sunday, between Sunday and Monday, before the game tours, everyone will have a clear idea of what we're looking for.
How long before you expect to see that tactical plan properly implemented on the pitch? Because expectations, as you know, are very high, and some of us have been guilty more so than others, and there's probably an expectation among some people this will be a mix of Brazil 1970 and Barcelona under Pep Guardiola that we're going to see within the first couple of matches. Are you happy for expectations to be high? Do you think people need
care
to tone it down?
It's irrelevant. I don't really mind either way. You know, I think I'm comfortable with it, and you know, I think listen, the main thing for us is we've got 8 games coming up, and but to qualify for the European Championships in Ireland would be incredibly special. And we've never known that as a nation, to have the European Championships, have a major tournament in our capital city. Like, be really, really special. And in order to, you know, we haven't qualified out of the group. We're in the playoff because we're in Group B in the Nations League. You know, we haven't qualified, so we've got to do it the hard way now. We've got to go beat Slovakia away, and then the winners of Bosnia and Northern Ireland away. So we've got to win two consecutive away games, which we haven't done. I don't know when the last time we beat two significant nations away from home back to back. So it's a big challenge, but it's one that we're well capable of winning. You know, we've got a very, very good team potentially, I think. And so I'm looking forward to getting them together for the games against Bulgaria and Finland, and then getting ready for the first game. I'm glad Slovakia is the first game in October, and now that's on the Thursday as opposed to the Wednesday, gives us an extra day, which I'm pleased about, because that's massive in our preparations. You know, if you're only getting players in the Sunday and they might have played, the fact that we're flying on the Tuesday and that game is back to the Thursday, which is great. And so we'll make sure we're ready.
You've spoken before about how pleased you are with the resources you have defensively in particular, and when you go through them, that they're a match for pretty much most teams in Europe right now, and the form they're in, the likes of John Egan, Seamus Coleman, the way he's emerged since the restart, and Matt Doherty, consistently brilliant over the last 18 months. Doherty was saying he still feels it's either himself or Coleman. Have you sort of something set in your mind around that, or is it still too early to say?
No, it is too early to say, and I think and right backs is a position we're doing quite well in, because actually Cyrus Christie scored a great goal for Fulham last week from outside the box, put it in the top corner, and he's actually been playing really well for Fulham recently as well, to be honest. I'm very, very impressed with him. He hasn't played every match for Fulham because they rotate, but he's been very good. Seamus is just a brilliant captain, and has been a brilliant servant for Ireland. Matt, like John Egan, like, we have the situation where Matt's 28 and John Egan 28 now, and they've only played twice. John's only played twice for Ireland, and or three times, 2.5 matches.
Yeah.
And Matt's played three competitive games for Ireland, and yet they've been playing at the top end of the Premier League, and they, you know, very, very, you know, good players. So they've been very underutilised by Ireland, and we're waiting. Late in their careers to appreciate them, you know. So, you know, I rate the two of them very highly.
Yeah. Every time we see your name, you seem to have a new role and an expanded role within the FAI. Now it looks as though you're going to be on the FAI's executive.
No, to be honest, there's no change in position. I think on the manager of the team, that's all I ever wanted to be. That's all I ever wanted to do. I think the difference is that we're working here, we live in Ireland, we're working closely with the managers, Jim Crawford, under 21 manager, Tom Moan, 19s, Andy Reid, 18s, Colin O'Brien, Paul O'Zam, and Jason Dunhue. All the international managers, we work together. We have we're meeting today actually on Teams today again. So we're meeting regularly, establishing a style of play that we want to formulate right throughout the teams. And I think there's been a lot of good work done before I was appointed. You know, a lot of good work done before I was appointed. And I think we're new doctor, technical director, and all of the coaches. And I think we want to formulate a team that gives a platform for us. We haven't had players like, believe it or not, Nathan, with Jeff Hendrick and Robbie Brady are 28 now, right? Now, apart from Alan Brown, who came from Cork City, and Shani Maguire played in Gibraltar, right, apart from those two Cork City lads that have played once and twice in terms of starts, competitive games, the next player from the 28 year olds is Aaron Connolly at 19.
Yeah.
So we've 9 years of no players actually making the breakthrough. Nine players out of player coming through. So all of a sudden we've got all these players now that all the underage managers have been working with, and all of the clubs throughout the country have been working, and we have these players who I feel over the next few years are ready to come through. And we want to change that. Every year we want to have a production line, not a production line, but we want to have a number of players who are capable of stepping up, and that's a lot of factors contribute to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not just as simple of you know, some years obviously have better players than others, you know, depending on, you know, we're a small country, you know, I know, when you got, you know, in comparison, and but that's the, it's something that we can't ignore.
And I think everyone would agree it's a real step forward that the international manager has such an influence on football throughout the country. But
well, I have a strong voice, and
but there's the other side of it as well, that if you are on the executive, and we know that struggles of the FAI
My position hasn't changed. I don't want to be a director, and I've no desire to be a director. I don't want a title.
Because the concern would be that every other previous manager has been judged on results of the senior team. Well, that you may be distracted by cuts that are coming in the FAI.
No, I'm not. I'm like the way Gary Owens spoke to me, chief executive. I'm not a director of the FAI. I've no desire to be. I ever wanted to be the manager. But I have a strong voice. I've articulated that strong voice since I've been in as under 21 manager on all football issues. And there's a seat at the table for me to articulate that voice if necessary. But he doesn't want me getting bogged down in meetings about budgets and so forth in relation to various different departments. And I don't intend doing that. But there's a vacancy there that I can step in and voice my opinion on major football issues, because we want football to be at the centre of the FAI. We have a new video analysis room coming in here. We never had one in the FAI, right? Okay. So me, Keith Damien, we'll be here working from the FAI when we're not in the UK and other countries looking at players. We'll be here. This is the centre. This should be this. The FAI should be about the international teams, the National League teams, schoolboy football throughout the country, and the amateur game. And football should be at the centre of the FAI, and that's the way I feel about it. And all the other departments should supplement that. Not sort of a fragmented set of departments in an organisation. It should be every other department should support the key football areas. And I'll be strong in terms of the international teams at all levels. You know, we've had a period of austerity with the teams over the years where managers haven't been able to prepare the teams the way they would have wanted. What do you get from that? You get 8 years of non-players coming through. That's what you get. And I think, or 9 years or whatever. So I think I'll make sure, you know, Ruud Dokter is the technical director. It's his area to appoint managers. He's made great appointments. And I'm here to, it's a collaborative approach. You know, and I think we work together in terms of trying to ensure that all of the managers get to be able to prepare the teams in the way that they need to.
Finally, you mentioned a strong footballing voice in the room. I know in your previous role with Dundalk, if there was what's going on in the League of Ireland was happening, you would have had a very strong voice and very strong thoughts on it. What have you made of what's gone on with the League of Ireland over the last few weeks and the constant discussions? And well, it seems finally a sign of a return to football.
Yeah, no, it must be very tough for all of the coaches and the players and the managers, coaches and players and supporters. I think it's a very tough time. And we must remember, like, you know, over 1,700 people died in this crisis. But I think, you know, you would have wanted, you know, for the players, you just want to see them back playing competitive matches. It is the highest standard of football in this country. I think it's you know, we want a vibrant league. Obviously, it's a shortened league this year. It's one that I'm just looking forward to seeing players back on the pitch. I think, you know, the four teams, Keith Long, for example, Bohemians, he's going into Europe, bringing Bohemians for the first time in many years.
Yeah.
They're going in. Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, Vinny Peart, first year in Europe last year as a manager, want to build on that. Stephen Bradley, first, you know, in Europe last year, looking to benefit from that experience, going again. Declan Devine, first year there, he've been in a couple of years, and he'll be back going in Europe again, and all of the players will be really looking forward to that. I think some of the players would have had tough times because they would have had their wages cut. Some of the clubs, they've been sort of struggling, I'm sure, with the current situation. So for them to get back and back to normality and playing is great news.
Yeah, great stuff, Stephen.
Thanks, Nathan.
Stephen Kenny there talking to Nathan this morning at Abbottstown. Still 2-1 Liverpool, by the way, 56 minutes gone at the Amex Stadium. Nathan is still with us now. A few things jump out to me, and then I'll throw them at you, and you go wherever takes your interest. The most passionate he got there was when he talked about the place of the FAI in Irish football, I thought, you know, and what he wants it to be and the vision he has for it. A strong, vibrant FAI, a strong kind of lively Abbottstown is almost the vision he's selling there. You know, where it's not just empty corridors, it's the analysis room, and you have Damien Duff there and Keith Andrews there, and it's where ideas are swapped, and it's the heartbeat of Irish football, and it's alive, you know, in a way that it probably hasn't been at times over the last decade or two. And then the second thing which jumps out is, not surprisingly, the work ethic here is off the charts. This is not a manager who does not believe in the value of analysis and looking at videotape and opposition and doing so again and again and making presentations to each other and leaving no stone unturned and seeing 35, 40 players every week. Those were the two things, actually, which, you know, jump out in comparison maybe with the last two, three regimes.
Well, on the first point and the FAI becoming that hub of activity, it is one of the real shames that Stephen Kenny is taking over at this moment of absolute crisis within Irish football. The FAI are over 50 million in debt with no possibility you would expect of any great crowds at the Aviva Stadium for the rest of this year. So it's not going to get any better. So as much as there is a buzz, I'm sure, of having a Damien Duff and Keith Andrews been around the place, been in the canteen, interacting with staff, there are probably far, far greater worries in everybody's minds right now. So it is, without question, a positive thing that there is that base, and they have no choice right now because they can't really go anywhere else. So I do wonder at this moment in time how much a difference that can make to the morale of staff around the place. But that's what the FAI should have always been. It should be top to bottom. He doesn't need to be going into under-16s training sessions, but that everybody feels they have an input and an impact and that their opinion matters. And also, which we started to see in the last couple of weeks with the GAA, where the inter-county managers can't get at their players, that they're holding webinars with club managers, telling them what they would like them to do, what their thoughts on the game are, how strength and conditioning should be run, that this sort of knowledge that they've built up and that they're gaining from watching, like the, as you say, the amount of matches that they are watching day in, day out, whether it's covering their own players or covering opposition players, and passing on what they're learning. So you're not holding it in, that actually everybody is gaining a little bit from the work and the knowledge of Stephen Kenny, Keith Andrews, Damien Duff, and all the rest of the backroom staff that are there. On the second point, I don't think there's any question he is going to grab this opportunity with both hands. And he realizes the situation they're in terms of the limited amount of time they're going to have with the players when they come in. So to get that message across, whether it's on these Zoom calls and letting know what the grand plan is, but when they only have the players for 2-3 days on training sessions, that will be one of the difficulties here, is that not going to get a huge amount of time in the training ground. And when you talk to players who played under Stephen Kenny, they all talk about his magic as a man manager and sort of struggle to explain it, but it's just him on the training ground and how he makes you feel and gets into your head that you can be a bit of a world beater. Is he going to have that time with the players on the training ground? Because they've got 3 matches probably in September, potentially 3 in October, again into September, into November. Not a lot of time actually just relaxing with the players. It's all going to be pretty intense. So he's obviously trying to get as much done so that it's a very clear message when the players come in. So yeah, it's today again was like there's so much still up in the air. We have no idea whether supporters are going to be allowed to travel to Bulgaria for that first game in the Nations League. Will anybody be allowed to travel? Will media be covering the game? They're playing Finland then a few days after that. Again, will it be an empty Aviva Stadium? So all of this is still totally up in the air from Stephen Kenny's point of view and how he plans all of this and what difficulties might there be for players travelling in from England to Dublin around then. We are only talking 5-6 weeks away. So, and it feels as though everybody's in a slightly different mindset even today from 2-3 weeks previous to now as to where the virus is going. So there are so many difficulties. But I think when he looks at the players and how they performed over the last few weeks, he couldn't be happier. And it will eventually focus on, right now his back four looks to be Seamus Coleman, Shane Duffy, John Egan, Enda Stevens. Where does Matt Doherty fit in? He said today that he doesn't think you can turn around into a 3-man defence over the space of a training session and a half. So where does Doherty fit in? Is it on the right side of midfield? Possibly. It would be such a shame for Matt Doherty if somehow he ended up being the odd man out again.
Listen, great stuff. Thanks, Emil.
Cheers, Joe.
Cheers, Nathan. Who'll be back tomorrow. Live commentary of Villa Manchester United, by the way, tomorrow night on the show. Still 2-1 at the Amex. We are talking to Paddy Agnew over in Rome next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. When you've seen West Ham beat Preston in the 1963 FA Cup final for the sixth time, live football is back. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
Welcome back. 65 minutes gone at the Amex Stadium. Richard Newman is standing by.
Brighton and Hove Albion 1, Liverpool 2. Really good tempo at the start of the second half. The hosts absolutely playing their part and looked like they could threaten an equaliser. That said, it's the champions who've had the better chance since the break. Mohamed Salah should probably have got his second goal of the game after being set clear. He couldn't beat a combination of Albion keeper Matt Ryan and captain Lewis Dunk. Now at the other end, Dan Byrne has just gone close after a ball whipped into the box, the header across goal. Dan Byrne couldn't get his effort on target. Could be a decent second half. It's Brighton 1, Liverpool 2.
65 minutes gone there. Brighton have had some decent passages of play in this second half, but still trail 2-1. Over in the Nou Camp, by the way, it's Barcelona 0, Espanyol 0 after 40 minutes. We're turning to Serie A, though. Paddy Agnew with us from Rome. Hi, Paddy, how you doing?
Good evening, Joe. Good evening to our listeners.
Much to discuss. So just on a broad kind of a check-in, how is Serie A going? Fanless stadiums, we're all getting used to it. Is it being well received over there?
Well, any football is well received in Italy. And as you're getting used to it over there, they're getting used to it over here. The television ratings are terrific for them. And as far as football is concerned, we've got a very surprising story here. Juventus, look like they're going to win the title.
Yeah, the streets will go wild. I mean, there'll be no keeping them in the streets of Turin as they try and digest the news. I saw, though, last night Lazio lost, who were there in second place, but Juve lost as well, 4-2 to AC Milan. Milan, just before I ask you about Juventus, are worth touching on. People may have seen the news that Ralf Rangnick is going to be the club's new manager for next season, German, and has been linked with various big jobs in the past, you know, Manchester United for a time, Bayern Munich, others. He will be Milan's fifth manager since 2016. They've had Montella, they've had Gattuso, of course, Gianpaoli, and Stefano Pioli, who's still there, took over in October. They're, what, fifth in the table, Milan. How far are Milan away from anything approaching very, very serious title contenders again?
Well, not this season, they're not going to be, obviously, but there's a problem. The problem is we don't know a lot about the German man coming into coach. He's a people like Paolo Maldini, the former Milan great, who's been part of the part of the direction of the club at the moment. He hasn't been terribly enthusiastic about this, and he would have preferred to find an Italian coach or stick with the guy who's doing a good job there at the moment, Stefano Pioli. So, for the time being, the club this season, to try and patch up a bad situation, they called back 37-year-old Zlatan Ibrahimovic to lead the troops from January on. And he's done it with very, very successfully. But, I mean, it's not exactly planning for the future. And Ibrahimovic, as far as we know, will not be there next season. So a lot of questions about them. However, it has to be said they've got a very young squad apart from Ibrahimovic. And the sort of football they've been playing the last couple of weeks since the end of the lockdown and football's come back has been very, very enterprising. And they played very, very well against Juventus last night. And they were full value for the 4-2 defeat of Juventus. And not many teams are can say that.
So is this the case with Milan, of given their financial woes of late, relatively speaking, they're going for youth over expensive experience, as Zlatan aside?
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're not going to be in a situation where they'll bring in any $40 million, $50 million players. They're not going to go for that type of player for the time being. But they, you know, they have young players like Rebic, the Croat, up front, Leo, the Brazilian, up front as well, Benacer in midfield. These are all players who are 22, 23, and their best football's in front of them. So,
as for Juventus, as you referenced, they're 7 points clear in the table. They're still in the Champions League as well. Lyon are their opposition at the quarterfinal stages. Sarri. So, I mean, Sarri, I don't think he's missed much around Stamford Bridge. They never really took to him. I presume Juventus fans were anticipating football akin to what we saw from his Napoli teams. What have they been on the end of this season? What have they been watching?
A certain amount of confusion in the sense that they haven't delivered the champagne football that he sometimes delivered with Napoli. But he's delivered the results. And as we all know, while he continues to deliver the results, he's fine. You know, they started off after the lockdown with the Italian Cup, and they got beaten by Napoli in the Italian Cup final, and that was a bit of a setback by their standards. But since then, you know, they had rattled in just looking at it here, they'd rattled in, you know, wins against Bologna, Lecce, and Genoa, not to mention a 4-1 win against Torino in the Turin Derby before last night. But last night was a disturbing result, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of scratching of the head. But the problems that they seem to have last night concern much more midfield blocking and defence.
I was reading that Ronaldo, even though he's still scoring goals and his numbers are still quite good, has not necessarily been the key man this year for Juventus. I don't know to what extent that's true, that it was more, I was reading, Dybala had taken centre stage, and this, you know, not long after Juve had been open to selling him. Is that how you've seen things?
Absolutely, yeah. No, Dybala's been their best player. And he's, you know, he's whether he's, he can be an attacking midfielder, he can be a striker, he's got a terrific vision. He's got, he can do basically everything. He can score them himself, he can set them up. And he can hit terrific free kicks. He's a very important player for them. But to go back to Ronaldo, Ronaldo remains very useful to them because he last night's game, for example, Juventus go 1-0 up thanks to a penalty. Then they get Ronaldo makes it 2-0 after that, and it was one of, by his standards, very few shots he had in goal. But what I'm saying is he doesn't miss too many if you give him a chance in front of goal, and he's still very, very sharp.
And his body still looks good. I don't mean aesthetically. I know aesthetically he still looks in good shape, but he's still moving reasonably okay.
No, he looked fine. He was a bit. He's playing himself back into form. He was definitely one person who came out of the lockdown a bit slowly, and he did not play particularly well in the first couple of games, but he's playing a lot better now, and I think you'll find that he's going to be really important come the Champions League next month. He'll actually be very, very important.
Paddy, has this Arthur swap for Pjanic been criticised in Italy? It's been something we've talked about over here as effectively not a flouting of FFP, but certainly beneficial from an FFP point of view. Both clubs have been able to chalk up a profit of €60 million each on the deal. Now, there may be some footballing logic behind it for both clubs as well. Has that been a big controversy at all over there?
Well, if it has, I've missed it, but yeah. I mean, I could have missed that one. This is going to be a summer of some very strange deals, I suspect. And people are going to be, inverted commas, fiddling the books as much as possible.
And somebody else I wanted to ask you about was Alexis Sanchez, who is going to stay on at Inter Milan until the end of this extended season anyway. So as things stand, and I suspect Ed Woodward and the Glazers cry about this situation on a nightly basis, but as things stand, Inter pays Sanchez €191,000 per week, and Manchester United pay the other 300 and something thousand each week for him not to be at Old Trafford. It's just insanity in its truest form. Has Sanchez ever caught fire over at Inter? Has he ever had periods where he's looked like the player we saw at Arsenal?
Just beginning to.
Right.
Conte said the other day, I mean, admittedly it was a 6-0 win against Brescia, but he had a fantastic game, and a couple of games before that he was starting to look like he was coming back to himself. But Conte absolutely said, this is a player we haven't seen, the real Sanchez. He's just coming to himself. And he said at that time, I'm hoping that he's going to be really useful to us between now and the end of the season on our title battle, in the sense that he thought there was a title battle. Of course, since then, Inter have lost to Bologna. They're most definitely not going to win the title.
Sanchez's drop-off in form was never really explained during his time at England, or, you know, there were never leaks out of Manchester. Maybe attitude was talked about a touch as to why he had dropped off so much. Did you ever anything on the grapevine in Italy about why he had fallen off so badly?
It was put under muscle problems, I thought. More than, it was a physical thing. Because, you know, they're pretty familiar with him in Italy. They've seen him, and he started off here at Udinese, and he was absolutely dynamite. And I imagine they felt it was just that he wasn't physically 100%.
Right. What about crowds coming back? What's the COVID situation in Italy? Admittedly subject to huge change at any moment, and a second wave is something we all fear, but is there talk of crowds coming back at the start of next season in any capacity?
Well, the football league and many of the club owners wanted to talk about getting crowds back into the stadium before the end of this season. That's this month. Well, that's not going to happen. But the hope that they might get, there might be some sort of reduced capacity crowds, like 15,000 in a big stadium, something like that. That's still very much in their minds, yes.
Okay. Paddy Agnew, as ever. Thanks so much, Paddy.
Thank you.
Cheers. And I should let you know as well that Liverpool have just scored a third against Brighton. Salah with a header from a corner, 76 minutes on the clock. Liverpool 3-1 up.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. It's not quite a TikTok lip sync of Donald Trump, but it's a close second. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.